Hey guys, welcome to the newest episode of Untucked. Today we are going to talk about a podcast we recently listened to that discussed advice for young advisors looking to kind of make their way in the industry. We are also going to discuss restaurant cancellation fees, no-shows, RSVPing and not going, and a kind of a myriad of those types of things. And then our top five is the top five best female characters in a movie. Thanks for listening. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect the opinions or views of FC Advisory, the Financial Coach Group, or the New Wealth Project. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be interpreted as investment advice. Welcome to episode 98 of Untucked. This is Megan.
And Mike here.
This is Jeff. So, did you guys know that DeSean Jackson in his career caught a touchdown pass from Donovan McNabb, Carson Wentz, Michael Vick, and Jalen Hurts?
It's pretty cool.
And Nick Foles and Cobb, Kevin Cobb. Six different Eagles quarterbacks dating back to McNabb.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't think it was real. Like, when I heard McNabb, Vic, Wentz, and Hurts, I didn't believe it. And then when I researched it, there was also Nick Foles and Kevin Cobb.
Okay.
It's fun. I think that is pretty much what I expect out of our fun facts.
Well, there you go, Meg.
I guess that's a nice segue, I suppose, into Philly sports. We can start with the Birds. I guess we haven't recorded since Kelce officially announced, since Saquon signed.
Oof. Yeah.
So that's the off-season news.
And who left?
Swift.
The big controversy right now is Haason Reddick. They moved his $1 million bonus to be paid from like March 15th to like April 1st. So speculation is they did that to buy themselves some time so that they can possibly trade him, which has the Eagles community in a bit of a stir, because the defense will just, with the pieces they've added and with him, the defense looks like it could be pretty good.
Yeah, because they just signed a linebacker from...
I think its last name is Huss.
Oh, that's who you were referring to. Got it. Yeah.
So we were on our way to the Flyers game last night and flipped through the Fanatic or whatever the name of that
97
sports talk show is, right?
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah.
All we're talking about is the Eagles. What are these 12 months out of the year?
Pretty much.
Talking about the Eagles and nothing else?
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't understand it. I do, I guess, but it's pathetic, right?
I don't know if I would classify it as pathetic. This town loves football, and it loves the Eagles. And when the Flyers have sucked, when the Sixers keep failing, they don't care to talk about them.
But they wouldn't talk about them anyway. They just want to talk about the Eagles 365 days.
I mean, you were in the car for 40 minutes. They do talk about those other teams. They don't talk about them nearly as much as the Eagles, but they do talk about the Flyers, the Sixers, and the Phillies for sure.
Okay.
But again, nowhere near as much as they talk about the Eagles.
Well, it's coming from the fans. I mean, they talk about what the fans want to call in about, right, basically.
Yeah, it's like, do we talk about who the Eagles just signed or the fact that Tyrese Maxey just came back from a concussion and it looks like they may not make the playoffs?
I mean, one of them is in season, one of them is not.
I get you. I mean, I understand. I prefer to talk about my teams that are in season. I don't care at all during the off season.
Right. So spring training is not in season.
Correct.
Okay. just establishing that fact.
I mean, their like first game is in like 7 days.
And I
not
heard
now though. Correct.
I heard they've done away with Dollar Dog Night. Is
yeah.
this true?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. gone.
Too many unruly hot dog throwing fans. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the reason? Yeah. I didn't know the reason.
They throw them on the field and
on the field at other people.
Yeah. I mean, a dollar for a projectile device seems like a good deal.
Have you ever seen the hot dogs that are served on Dollar Dog Night?
I have.
They're like gray.
They're pretty gross. Yeah, they're pretty disgusting.
I think it's probably for the benefit. Despite Philadelphia being in an uproar generally about it, I think health-wise, it's for the better.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, so birds, we're all fairly happy with what they've done in the offseason.
We are?
As far That's I don't know anything about the person they signed, the Husk guy. I mean, I know they need help there. My brother read me a tweet that he was like ranked the fifth worst linebacker in the league last year. So.
And isn't Barkley for Swift kind of a wash?
No.
Isn't Barkley kind of on the back three or four holes of his career, would you say?
He just hasn't stayed healthy.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll take Saquon over Swift like any day.
All right.
Never like from the standpoint, I think he's probably a better back. He's bigger, but he's also a leader apparently. And I've just learned this from since they signed him that he's kind of a good locker room guy. He's good on the sidelines. He wants to win and he's competitive. And like, I think this team needs it.
Ooh, sure. Penn State Nation's going to love this, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our boy has come home.
Yikes.
All right, so where do we stand with the Sixers?
I think they're sixth in the East. Joe's still hurt. They are just... I mean, we're here. He's back to basketball practice. We're here. I'm hearing like the first couple of weeks in April, possibly. I think how... Like the position that they're in at that point in time is probably going to dictate what they like, if they bring him back, to what level, what extent they bring him back. They have just been drowning without him.
Who else is hurt? Melton?
D'Anthony Melton's hurt. Tobias is hurt right now, but they've been better when he's not playing. Tyrese had a concussion, like you mentioned, so he missed a couple of games. Yeah, so it's been like ugly. Basketball. They've gotten a couple of wins that like they probably shouldn't have.
They just beat Miami, didn't they?
Yeah, they just beat the Heat. Now Jimmy Butler didn't play in that game. But yeah, so I guess if they can stay in this like 5 or 6 spot, there'd be reason to bring Joe back. If they get to like 7 or 8 and they have a first round matchup against Boston or Milwaukee, I just don't know how much sense it makes.
If they are 6 or worse.
I would say 6 is probably fine, right? Because you go 6-3. Like, I don't hate the Cavs matchup.
But if Joe's not 100%, I don't see any reason to bring him back this year.
I mean, I would assume that they would make sure he's 100%. When I say, like, to the extent that they'd bring him back, it's like if they commit to actually making a playoff run or if they just shut him down.
Yeah, if he's not 100%, I don't care to watch them make a playoff run.
Yeah.
Because I know how that's going to...
very far.
Yeah, I mean, I know how that's going to end. With him him without not being 100% and then getting inserted back into the lineup with not a lot of time to get back into, like, playing shape. Like, why even subject him to another disappointment in the postseason? I'd almost rather than like not make the playoffs.
I mean, that would be, it's possible, but I mean, likely not probable at this point. So yeah, not great in the outlook for the Sixers. Anything better for the Flyers?
You know, they're still hanging on to one of the final spots for playoffs. They're They have a really, their next three games are really hard. It's three of the top teams in the league. I mean, it's Carolina, Boston, and I think Florida. But the teams that are chasing them, you know, they also have hard schedules. So it really might come down to like the last week. I think it's a coin flip as to whether they make it or not, but I hope they do.
It's good hockey to watch. They're fun to watch.
Yeah. And you know, they have beaten some really good teams this year, not just like one or two. They've had a lot of good performances. So
even when they're outmatched, they still play hard.
They do.
Like, they still compete.
And they never stop.
Yeah, they still compete.
They don't nail it in the third period if they're down by two or three even. So that's good.
Whereas I think in the last year or two, I mean, they look like a high school team playing against a pro team, where I don't get that same vibe from them this year.
No.
That may change in the playoffs if they make the playoffs. But
yeah, and I mean, just purely talent-wise, it's not even close. They don't have the – I mean, they rely on like 20 goals from four or five guys, whereas most of the other teams have like one or two studs who are just like, you know, 40 goals, 50 goals, 100 points. And you watch them play and you're just like, that player is head and shoulders better than anyone on this team. But it's been working. I mean, they got a bunch of rookies in the lineup because guys are banged up, and it's crazy that they're not getting torched. Even last night, they were playing against like Austin Matthews and some of the best players on the Leafs, and they held their own. I mean, but you're right, Jeff. It's that they're fun to watch. I mean, hopefully they get one round of playoffs out of it and then see what happens from here. Draft.
All right. Anything we missed?
That's it.
I don't think so.
Want to get in the coach's corner?
Sure. Let's do it.
So today we're going to talk about a topic discussed on a podcast. The podcast is called The Compound Podcast. It's run by a couple of the guys over at Ritholtz Wealth Management. And we're going to specifically discuss a conversation that they had around career advice. So Josh Brown, who, what's he, like the founder, CEO, COO, yeah.
Founder, whatever, yeah.
Of Ritholtz. He shares his career advice for young advisors in the financial services industry. When asked of a listener, I was promised a book of business by my senior advisor who said he was planning on retiring soon. Fast forward 5 years and he's still around and showing no desire to let go. Josh shares his thoughts on getting started in this industry, the types of firms to consider joining, and maybe some to avoid.
So I don't know how much that specific topic is going to really vibe with our audience as far as like young advisors trying to take over for retiring advisors.
Okay.
I think what we plan to talk about that in other industries as well, right? Like joining, mm-hmm. getting a job sure. at a place where it's a family run and you're not part of the family. But the other thing I was thinking about when I was prepping for this was how clients feel about another advisor coming in and taking over a business or like being the successor advisor to some older person. It kind of blows my mind that I feel like in most cases, the clients just stick around. And I'm not really sure why that is. Is it just, what's the term I'm looking for? What do we call it?
Inertia.
Yeah. Is it just inertia? Is it they had a lot of faith in the person that was like, hey, Jeff, I had a lot of faith in you and you brought this other person in and then you retired. So yeah, I'm gonna stick with them. Or is it more inertia?
I think in that case, it might be just like maybe that client's not thrilled that they don't have their longtime advisor anymore. But the alternative might be I have to go start over somewhere else where I'd rather just stay where I am. And it's a lesser of the two evils. Not that that's the right word, but maybe that I'm just describing inertia in this case. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like to think maybe some firms in those situations are considerate and careful about the way in which that transition is done. And it's not like one day I'm meeting with Jeff and then the next time I come in, I'm meeting with who is a complete stranger to me. You know, maybe it's a series of engagements over the course of years. So that transition happens in a maybe a more comfortable way. And that's probably pie in the sky in some cases. But I would hope that firms who have, you know, had client longstanding clients for years and years and years would respect that relationship enough to go about it in a way in which, you know, they don't feel like they're being misled or put in a position where they even have to make a decision. Maybe they just feel good about the next person in line.
Yeah, the way you just described it is, in my opinion, the only way it should be done.
Yeah.
Right? So like younger advisor or successor advisor comes on board and is now a part of that client engagement for years before the person who's retiring steps away. Because I've seen when it happens the other way, well, John left and he went to Mass Mutual or whatever firm. And so now they gave me Ricky Slick. And inevitably, it ends with they leave. They leave Ricky Slick because he doesn't know. Like the feedback that I get from people that I meet that have been through that situation, it's like, I don't even meet with him. He doesn't even call me. I don't even see him. And it's just
his name's Ricky Slick.
Yeah, I mean it's just a poor transition. So I think the way like having an actual transition process allows the succeeding advisor that's going to be the new advisor.
Yeah, that's
the success. Yeah.
gives them the opportunity to really understand that client situation and not just be thrown into something and have to start all over.
So there's two aspects to this, two angles that I thought were, and getting back to the family business part of it, which Brown says what you said earlier, Jeff, which is like, don't ever go to work for a family business if you're not part of that family. And I think his point was, I'm not just talking about financial advice, I'm talking about like anything. And I think that is absolutely good advice, especially for very small firms in whatever the business is, because like the nepotism angle, the nepotism aspect of business is a real thing. And, you know, you're going to end up potentially having like the idiot son-in-law coming in and being your boss or, you know, whatever the example is. And I know of companies that operate this way and people that work there or did work there that just unbelievably frustrated because of that fact that you have the son, the daughter, the in-law, the whatever that gets elevated or is running a part of the business that is, and they're not very competent, and that just leads to. So I think as career advice, that's good advice for a young person. Be very, very wary of joining a family business like that, where there's either multiple family members already working there, running it, or that's going to happen in the future. I don't know. I think that's solid advice.
Agreed. And it doesn't matter how good you are.
No.
It doesn't matter how good, how hard you work. If there is a son-in-law there who's an idiot, he or daughter-in-law, like they're going to get the nod over you. Doesn't matter how good you are.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it in my world as well.
The second thing he was talking about that I thought was a good subject was when they look at young people to consider hiring, they really generally don't want people like right out of school. They want somebody to learn a little bit about the industry, work for a couple years for, let's say, a bigger firm, figure out what's going on, what the differences are between, you know, all the different players in the business, and then assuming that they're the right fit, then join. I kind of would agree with that. But I do know that a company I used to work for, they only hired kids like right out of MIT or out of, you know, like whatever like rocket science program they were learning their math and stuff from. This was a trading firm. They did not want to touch anybody who was like tainted by getting trained by anyone else by them. But
right.
And I can kind of see that as well. But I think I still, when it comes to us or just thinking about our business, I would agree more with Brown, which is that it's I think it's good to find somebody that has some level of experience, but the right experience. Like, I don't want somebody from an insurance company, right? I don't want somebody who was, you know, taught to like pitch product, and that's like what this business is. But it would be somebody from a, you know, from a Vanguard or from a firm that kind of at least operates with similar philosophies and approaches to like delivering advice and investment advice and that sort of thing. So, oh, that's it.
Agree with pretty much all of it. I can't speak obviously as well to other industries, but they kept talking in the podcast about just getting reps and like the ability to sit on the desk at Schwab and field calls that are going to be questions about anything and everything, and just becoming familiar and comfortable, one, dealing with investors and clients in that case, but also like figuring it out. I think the advantages and the benefits to being on your own in a sense and having to figure stuff out is a great tool to learn. And to your point, Mike, assuming it's done in an environment that aligns with then the RIA or the firm that you want to join a couple of years later, I mean, that can be awesome foundational, you know, work that doesn't have to be unwound by the company you're joining later. But they made a point that, you know, a lot of kids now with the CFP track being an option in colleges, like wanting to graduate and join an RIA. And it just might not be the best option when it comes to learning truly what all is available to you at that stage. So leaning on some of the bigger firms might just be a better step to figure out exactly what else is available.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've always kind of leaned towards that. Yep, go to Vanguard, go get trained, learn a little bit about the business. If you want to get your CFP or your master's, have them pay for it. But I'm kind of leaning away from that. Like, I kind of do like the track. Go to Widener, get your CFP, come out, join a small boutique RIA and have them just throw you into the fire and learn how to be a good independent financial planner. Because I think when there's a chance that you can come out of a Vanguard or a Merrill Lynch or one of those places a little tainted, a little like too investment centric and too asset allocation centric and too market timey centric, where some of those big firms' philosophies could you know, you could drink the Kool-Aid on it, and it's very difficult to unwind that from someone. Like, and I remember when we met you, Meg, I was stoked that, like, and I'll use this term loosely, like, we could brainwash her.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I believe in our approach to my core, and to be able to educate someone that way and kind of get them on that path and get them believing it, I think is hugely valuable. And we just literally threw you in the fire.
And I think, like, in cases where there's infrastructure in place to support that, yeah. I mean, of course, that's like maybe the better option. But I just feel like a lot of firms hire the young guy or the young girl to take the smallest relationships or to, right, make less, take over insignificant work. And it doesn't prove to be valuable in establishing those advisor like core qualities.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't even remember how often I was asked, like, early in my career, like, oh, so you're just managing like the small accounts, or you'll take like the person's kids, things like that. And we didn't do it that way intentionally. Right. So, and I think if there's an intention to not do it like that, then yeah, the opportunity for a 23-year-old to find a firm and learn the way that firm does it can be hugely beneficial. It just doesn't seem like that's maybe the industry standard for bringing up new talent.
Right.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing. It's hard to find that, I think. Because I don't think it's on offer very commonly. So, which is why I think he even made the point in the podcast, you know, leaving college, let's say, and then trying to join an RIA is very hard to do, because not a lot of RIAs are willing to hire someone like that, like you just described, Meg, they'd be looking typically with some to hire somebody who has some relationships already from somewhere else and bring them over and all that.
Because most people fall into that trap of not hiring until they need to hire.
Yes.
Whereas if you hire ahead of time and you have years or two to train that person up, they can become an advisor when you need them to be advisors. And that's yeah. And that's true in any industry. Like most employers wait until they need help and not get the help, get the next employee, train them up so that you can now expand more.
I mean, generally speaking, hiring is hard. Getting jobs is difficult. Like finding the fit on both sides is a challenge. And, you know, again, I think in our industry, there's a couple of different ways, obviously, that we've talked about being able to do it well. But like the ones we would certainly caution against beyond the family operated businesses, or you said, Mike, the insurance companies, you know, the very narrow-minded to asset allocation or investment focused, right? If you're a kid coming out of school wanting to learn how to be a financial planner, those are going to be opportunities that you certainly have. Northwestern Mutual will try their...
They'll call you that.
Yes. So just caution against not only the makeup of the firm, but also... kind of the business model,
yeah,
the compensation structure, I guess.
Yeah, so important to get advice from the right people in whatever industry it is that you're trying to break into. Like, and in ours, it's the same thing I would say to somebody who, because the bar is so low for a Northwestern Mutual or any insurance company, they'll hire anybody because it's mostly commission-based and they basically go make a list of everybody you know and go sell them an annuity or a product. And that's not the right way to learn this business. But if you don't know any better, you probably think it's perfectly fine. And so I would advise anybody never to do that. Just like in some other industry, you want to talk to people in that industry that can help you navigate the players and the good, the bad, and everything in between. That's so important. Easier said than done, but I think it's important.
Yeah, good advice.
Cool. All right. Want to move on?
Sure.
When canceling your reservation costs as much as dinner, this was an article from the New York Times. Requiring a deposit when making a dinner reservation is a relatively new requirement, holding the restaurant goers accountable and offering some sort of payment to the restaurant if plans are changed at the last minute. This got us thinking about no-shows more generally, restaurants, parties, RSVP required events, etc.
I did not know this was a thing. Did either one of you know this was a thing before we agreed it be a pod topic?
Reservations that require a deposit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that widespread, and I thought maybe there was like a day before kind of deadline, but maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, I can probably count on two hands the amount of times I've had to do this in like the last year.
What's the deposit? Like, how much are we talking?
I've paid expensive ones to the tune of like $100 a person. I'd say the most common is like $20 per person.
Per person. Yeah. Non-refundable?
So some do it a couple – non-refundable if you don't show up. Yeah, that's
okay.
The point.
No show, they keep your deposit.
They keep the deposit. But then I've seen it done a couple of different ways. Like once you get to the restaurant, sometimes the deposit is immediately reimbursed. Other times it's just taken off the bill.
Is it like, do you have up until 24 hours? Like what if you...
It depends on the restaurant.
Depends on the restaurant. What have you seen in your experience?
24 to 36. We went to a restaurant in Scottsdale that was 5 days maybe, that if you canceled within that 5 days, you get 50% of the deposit back. That was the $100 a person.
What if you had like a doctor's note that you had COVID?
I don't read the fine print. I'm not sure. But that's what led to the scenario I was describing to you guys that went viral a couple weeks ago, which was a woman canceled a reservation at a Boston restaurant. And she disputed the deposit with her credit card company, who essentially made her whole And then the restaurant owner found her on social media and bitched her out for canceling the reservation. So yeah, I don't know that I could say specifically, you know, what the terms and conditions are.
Right.
But it's pretty clear that, like, you don't show up here, we're keeping this dollar amount.
How do you feel about that? I'm a little torn.
Well, I think it's a broader theme that's going on, which is that there are a lot more, there's a lot more nickel and diming that's going on, just adding charges for things like that, or finding ways to charge people for behavior that may or may not be all that detrimental in the end. And there's also a lot of services that are being offered as part of what you're paying for that are being just outright not delivered. For example, and this is a little tangent, but so like Southwest Airlines now, so when they have a short flight that's like an hour or less,
like to South Carolina,
they will make, no, I've never, that's not, I'm not, I've never experienced it, but they will make an announcement that they're expecting turbulence, so therefore we're not going to be serving any snacks and, you know, whatever. So this, two things, it saves the airline money and it's deliberate, so the flight attendant staff can just sit on their asses for the 45 minutes and not have to actually work. So back to our restaurant thing, I think it's a broader thing that's going on in a lot of businesses where they're just piling on fees wherever they can, like a no-show fee, which I'm against, by the way. I'll to answer your question, I'm against it. To just not delivering on things that they used to.
How can you be just flat out against it, though? I own a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I have a full restaurant booked for the evening per my reservations. We're turning away people because we have reserved tables. And 6-4 tops that reserved tables don't show up. I mean, it directly impacts my bottom line.
You could issue a credit for a future visit. Would you be okay with that?
No, I still lost revenue.
No, you don't. You keep the money till they show up again. Right? You've given them a credit, but you're not actually like giving him their, like, there's no money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you keep the money. I keep your deposit, and it's held as a on credit for you until you show up again.
Either way.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. I think I'm surprised they haven't done this sooner, because you can just, like, the amount of revenue you could lose by people just, and I'm sure I'd love to know the numbers from the restaurant industry. Like, what's, not like the high-end restaurants, but like your local PJ Wheelahan's or places like that that have, maybe not PJ Wheelahan's, but
yeah, like they won't, yeah, have
a reservation,
right, but like a place, yeah, like a Fleming's or whatever, yeah, like a steakhouse that has reservations, places where you need to make a reservation to get a table on a Saturday night. Like, you can't just have people not showing up with no responsibility.
I mean, my life is easy. I don't have a lot of things like pop up, so I'm not one that cancels and doesn't show if I make intentional, like, so it's never bothered me. I've never batted an eye at any dollar amount of them, you know, reserving, like maintaining a reservation.
So are you okay with your doctor's offices banging you for a fee when you cancel an appointment?
I don't like it, but I understand.
Does your doctor do that?
No, but I know some that do. Oh. Yeah.
Like, if you have a therapy appointment and you don't show up to your therapy appointment, you pay $85 or, yeah, $150. If you don't show up to your trainer, right, because you canceled at 6 o'clock in the morning for your 7 o'clock workout, they charge you.
So you're saying we should do the same?
Yeah, I mean, I believe me, I thought about all this prior to this. Like, we offer complimentary introductory meetings, and it doesn't happen often, but it has happened more in the past, but recently, like I'd say in the last 10 years has happened very little. But yeah, when people show up, I give people the benefit of their doubt. Shit happens. Sometimes you just, you know, you can't make an appointment. When it happens a second time, yeah, I feel like sending people a bill.
We had that happen like within the last year.
It's like three times. The person sent three meetings,
yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, and canceled all three of them. I think two of them without notice.
Yes.
Then let's have, and then the restaurants should just have, you get one freebie. And then after that, if you're like a serial no-shower, then yeah.
I like your idea. And that solves the problem. Like if anything came up, right? Because things happen, right? You have a party of four and Jenny got sick. So now like the party's not going because it was Jenny's birthday. So yeah, you have a $400 credit, $100 ahead for when you reschedule your dinner. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, but just you have keeping to do it, though. It like you got to do it within three. Like you can't.
Sure.
I think logistically that makes like a bigger. It's more work.
It definitely is. It's definitely more.
Like now we're now we're like itemizing friggin' but credits that we have to maintain for people.
But that's fine. You got four. You get to keep $400, and you got to sit somebody else at that table potentially. So that's worth the extra work the restaurant has to do.
Or they just keep it and the people like reschedule the reservation when
so
they want to.
So if that's the deal, I would be hesitant to book it. Now, I know.
But that's what you know going into it.
Right. And it's probably not going to impact their reservations. But you're going to exclude a certain amount of people that just don't want to do that.
Then they should be excluded.
Yeah. Look at you, all freaking high and mighty. And it doesn't really matter to me about the money. I just,
no,
you know,
that's,
my life is so easy.
I did not say that. I said I don't cancel often. So the consideration around making a reservation and ultimately, again, either being reimbursed or have it deducted from the bill I was going to pay anyway. Like it's not going to keep me from doing something.
Okay. I just don't agree. Like if a restaurant has a 5-day like policy where you got to let me know 5 days before your meal if you and your party are showing up or we're hitting you for $100 ahead. Like there's a lot that can happen in 5 days in my life, maybe not your life.
That's the point I just
made. Yeah. So I'm not making a reservation there when I know I could be out $400. With no recourse.
Okay.
Like, what if you get the stomach bug the day before? I'll just show up. Hey, I didn't want to lose my $400, so I'm here. By the way, I have like a raging case of the stomach bug and COVID. And the flu. Can you seat me as close to other people as possible?
Okay.
So generally, how do we feel about no-shows? When you like RSVP for a wedding, like you go, right?
Yeah.
You have to show up, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't show up, that's generally something happened, right? Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But like parties, friends' parties that require RSVPs, you're a little more lax on those, right?
That require an RSVP?
Sure.
No. I mean, I feel like if I RSVP'd, yeah.
So you haven't had an event in recent time where you RSVP'd for something and you know the afternoon of the event that's happening in the evening, you were like, eh, I really don't feel like going to that tonight, and you just bailed.
Anything that requires an RSVP in recent memory for me is we've not like just said, ah, we're out. You just that would be like a somewhat formal.
That, yeah,
gathering.
I guess that's what I'm like. If it's my girlfriend texted me and said, hey, do you want to grab dinner?
Right.
And I said, yes. And then she said, let's grab dinner Friday. And then Friday afternoon rolls around. I'm like, you know what? I'm out. Like I said, yes, but I'm canceling. I'll do that. But like if there was a communication that was like by this date, tell me you're coming. And I said, yes, I'm going. I'm going.
Yeah. Like so, Susie's graduation party, which typically is like we need a head count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We're in like. We wouldn't bail.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, unless something...
It's a great example. Susie's graduation party is a great example. I have definitely bailed on those that I've RSVP'd for.
Hmm.
That you've said you were going to go to?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I still send the card.
Yeah, yeah.
With a few shekels in it, but, like, mm-hmm. I'm not... Like, if I just, like, that afternoon, I'm like, ugh. I know, like, four people that are going to be there. Just send the card.
Yeah, I guess like graduation parties, birthday, I don't know. Like if they're big group things, I kind of feel like it's less of the, I guess I'm thinking about like sit down meals. You know what I mean? Like a situation where like my head was paid for. Like that is an absolute mm-hmm. yes. Everything else is probably a game time decision.
Okay. So like you and Steven are invited to a dinner party.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, it's Saturday night. I have four couples coming over. You're okay to just like, you can bail on that one. Even though there's no formal RSVP.
Four couples is small. That's probably too small to bail.
Right, because like, you're buying steaks or whatever you're serving for those amount of people.
That's too small to bail last minute. But like if it's a birthday party with 30 people, yeah, no. I'm cool saying like, sorry, can't make it.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever done that. I have a friend, well, an ex-friend who RSVP'd yes to two weddings and didn't go to either of them and didn't send gifts.
That's why that person is an ex-friend.
Right, is an
ex-friend. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Totally. You absolutely do not do that.
Yeah. Twice so, in the same friend group.
I mean, hey, Open Table will not let you make two reservations at the same time. They figured it out.
So let's dissect that one. So the wedding one, you say you're going, you and your plus one. And let's say you can't make it or you decide last minute you don't want to go. You don't show. You send the gift, like immediately. Like you send the card with, and I'm making up a number, $300 or $500 in it, whatever you were going to give for that to that couple for that wedding. Does that really, like, now does your non-attendance really matter? Like, the same thing is happening.
What do you mean?
Like, you're giving a gift.
Yeah.
If you showed up, you would have ate the meal that they already paid for. If you didn't show up, they already paid for the meal. And you gave the gift. I mean, it's a wash, other than the fact that they could have invited, like someone else, I guess, could have accepted.
Yes.
You only invite a certain number of people, but maybe there's like a wave
there's
two.
There's a B list, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and in cases where like something pops up, like where that it keeps you from going, I mean, sure.
But you have to send the gift.
You have to send absolutely. The gift.
I don't know. The no-show question is very... thank you. Far-reaching. There's a lot of different. We haven't even talked about a lot of other no-show scenarios, but
seems very fluid.
Yeah,
I'm okay with a no-show, and I'm okay with them giving me a credit. I'm not okay with them just keeping it.
Yeah, the restaurant thing, I'm pretty firm on. Other situations,
I'm over the place. Like, who knows what's going to happen with Megan and how she feels about it?
All right, let's get into the top five.
Let's do it.
Top five best female characters in a movie.
In a movie specifically.
Movie specifically. Who wants to kick us off?
I can go. I don't think I'll have much overlap. Uma Thurman and Kill Bill. Really?
Yep.
Okay. Then you probably have my next one too. Gamora from the Avengers.
No.
Nope.
Okay. I don't know her name. Whoever plays Wonder Woman as Wonder Woman.
Galdo.
Yeah, never saw it.
I thought it was terrible.
I think she's awesome.
Okay.
And she was awesome as Wonder Woman.
Okay. I think there was a good one and then there was a bad one, right?
1984 wasn't as good as the first. The first one was a phenomenal movie.
Okay.
She was a boss in it.
Yeah.
And she killed it. Like, she is Wonder Woman. I can't imagine anyone else playing her.
Okay.
Jessica Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Does that count as a movie?
It's a movie. But it's not like a TV show.
It's like pretty much a cartoon, isn't it?
It's actually a hybrid.
Jessica?
It's a hybrid.
Are you kidding me?
Dude, she was a smoke show.
Oh my God.
Like, all the...
She's a rabbit, correct?
No, she's a human.
Is she the human that he has a crush on?
Yeah.
Okay, and I guess I've never seen Roger Rabbit.
Like, every cartoon in the movie had the whole, like, cartoon eye things pop out when when I saw her. And all the humans in the movie, like, double take. Like, she was a smoke show.
Jessica, what's her name?
Rabbit.
Rabbit.
It should have popped right up as you're Googling it, Megan. I mean, I can't imagine.
Wait, so she's a person or a cartoon?
She's a human. She's a cartoon human.
So she's a cartoon.
In the movie. She's a character in the movie.
Yeah, but she's a cartoon.
I don't know why.
She's not real. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys are discriminating against cartoons.
Kind of.
And Rosie Perez in White Man Can't Jump. I thought she was an awesome character.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go. I don't think I do have Uma Thurman, but I have her as Mia Wallace in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's a good one.
I've got Marge Gunderson from Fargo, played by Frances McDormand. Did you ever see that?
I have.
The, yeah. It's like the original Fargo movie, maybe. Yeah. Good character. I had to get a funny one in there. I got Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids.
She was
a good one.
Yeah, she was on my list.
Yeah.
You could there's another one in that movie.
I know, I know. Next I have Patricia Arquette in True Romance as Alabama.
That's a good one.
Last name, but
yeah, that's a really good one.
The scene with Gandolfini.
Yeah, oh my God, it's awesome. Classic. Yeah. Classic.
And then finally I got Kathy Bates as Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Yeah. That one, like, gives me chills. Yeah. I can't think of her.
Yeah.
So I also had Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. Elle Woods. Iconic. Legally Blonde. Are you kidding me?
No. Like Reese Witherspoon. Yeah.
Yeah.
The pink suit. Yeah.
Yeah. Julia Roberts and Erin Brockovich.
Okay.
Did you guys ever see it?
I don't think I have.
It's very good. Octavia Spencer is one of the women who plays one of the maids in The Help. She's like the most outspoken one. She creates a pie that.
Yeah. That's a good call. I thought of her.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then have you guys ever seen She's the Man?
I think so.
Amanda Bynes plays a high school women's soccer player who poses as her twin brother to be on the men's team to prove she can be on the men's team. It is the crazy, like the nuttiest would never happen. It's hysterical, and she plays a dude so well.
That's good. Good list.
I think there's so many more out there too.
This was there were a million.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we overlapped it all.
Yeah, interesting.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Bye.